Thank you.
Thank you, Pierre.
Oh, beautiful. Thank you. That's such a nice. Wow.
Thank you.
That's amazing. Is that on?
Yeah.
That's quite something when you hear things about yourself. You experience yourself as the person who wakes up in the morning dreaming.
And brushes
your
teeth.
Other people think of you as an outer figure. That's quite amazing.
It's true. He's very funny.
He's funny?
I think so.
I think you're funny.
Okay, all right. We both are. Mm-hmm. Hello, everybody. It's lovely to see you. Okay. And I. It's really nice to see you, and we're really looking forward to... Well, I'm suddenly seeing people I haven't seen in a long time, so mm-hmm. I feel a bit overwhelmed and touched to see everybody, a lot mm-hmm. of people that we know and many people we haven't met. And I, just as Pierre and Jai were saying, want to warmly welcome everybody to the conference. And we must thank you for the beautiful introduction, Jai and Pierre. And we want to thank both of you and Carol and Greg once again. They have done an enormous amount of organizing that's never seen to make something like this possible. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. I realize that the lights just above us aren't on and that my eyes aren't as young as they used to be, so I'm trying to see my notes. I should have printed it bigger.
I'll take a guess.
I'll take a guess at what I was going to say and be spontaneous. This evening, Arnie and I would love to share with you some ideas about rainbow medicine, the dream body, and non-locality. And I was going to speak for a while, and then Arnie's going to continue. But because we think that the atmosphere that we create together, wherever we are, is an important part of our sense of wellness and community, we thought it might be nice if you wouldn't mind turning and seeing if there's somebody just near you or a couple of people that you haven't met, if you're not too shy, and just introduce yourself, say your name or whatever you feel like saying.
Just for a moment.
Just for a minute, and then we'll go on together.
I just want to... Yeah. Good euch hier zu haben. It's good that you're by the here sind. Freut mich. Wir werden dann sehen 212 oder 13... Das sehen wir noch. Okay, go ahead, Ames. Go ahead.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll give them another second, then I'll go on.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, maybe we can go on together. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
She's a doctor.
Great.
Okay.
If you can hear us, would you say, let's go? Okay.
Wow.
Great. Okay. Great.
I think Jai already said a lot about us, but maybe I can just repeat very briefly before we go into what we wanted to talk about this evening that... Arnie and I are process-oriented therapists, and we have practices here in Portland and work in many places around the world, as you said, teaching process work and doing conflict resolution. And we're part of the Process Work Institute, the Process Work School here in Portland, and part of many schools and communities around the world. Many of you are part of those communities. And... just to share with you, we just came from the coast yesterday, I think, a little time confused, where we were doing a workshop, some of you were there, on what we call the second training, which has to do with finding and developing what we call an earth-based eldership, kind of coming from the earth to find our eldership, to deal with our own inner conflicts and difficulties and also in working in the world, and that was very exciting for us. And I'm pausing because I also said on the coast that in the moment I'm dealing with my father who lives in Ohio. He has Alzheimer's and he's looking like he's rapidly going towards declining and going in a hospice soon. So I'm kind of dealing with my family and my feelings are partly there. And so I just have to say that because it's in my mind just now.
Yeah, but you're not alone in everything. Oh, I'm with you too.
Oh, yeah. You're so great.
She's nice to snuggle with.
Are we supposed to do that in the lecture?
Yes, we are.
All right.
Yes.
I never know, like, yes. What's the thing you're supposed to do. Okay. Thank you.
Yes.
So sweet. He's so great to work with.
Relationship is a big point.
Yeah. It's the biggest. Well, one of the biggest. As an introduction, I know many of us here, some here know about process work and some don't, and I feel it's important to speak in general for everybody. So let me just say that process work is a multidisciplinary, multi-spectrum approach to working with individuals and relationships and groups, and it's been applied in many areas of application, as some of you know, like working with the body and body symptoms, dream work, working with movement and movement challenges, relationship work, working with people in extreme and altered states of consciousness. And another area I think Pierre mentioned was working with people in comatose states and following their very, very subtle, minimal cues in those very deeply altered states, something very dear to me, and people will be talking about that in many other of these areas during the conference. Also, another aspect of our work is working with large groups and organizations and conflict resolution in city issues. And most recently, we've been applying process work to ecology. And I know it sounds like a lot of areas, and it is, but all of them are really drawn together by the basic idea of process, which means for us noticing and trying to follow the flow of our awareness and the flow of our experiences, whether we're working with somebody with very subtle cues in coma or we're working with a large group in a big conflict, with the idea that there are seeds of meaning and wisdom contained even within the most difficult of human situations. And a crucial aspect of our work for many of us, I think, is the interconnectedness of these various areas. They're not just separate and individual, but for example, our work with, when working with people with body symptoms, for us is intimately connected with dream work. And it's also very closely connected with social issues and social work, outer work. Individual work is frequently connected to relationship work, and I don't know, coma work is very often connected to family work and sometimes even to organizational work. So all of the areas are really intimately intertwined. Mm-hmm. Let me kind of step backwards for a moment and focus on what we're going to talk about tonight, what I'll be talking about, mainly on the body and dream work aspect of our work. And I think I said I'm going to talk a while and then you're going to go on, didn't I?
If you didn't, that's what's
going
to happen.
If I didn't, that's going to happen. Okay. Mm-hmm. If we think generally of the body and its symptoms, our basic question is how do we care for, recover from, and also grow psychologically from our body symptoms? How should we approach them? Should we do allopathic medicine? Well, of course, if it works and it's good for you, that's a great direction. Alternative methods, of course, if they're helpful, and that's a good direction for you. And I think we all know that we need to keep our cholesterol down, eat vegetables. I mean, I guess these are debatable, too. It changes frequently. But better eat better carbs and fish oils and get a lot of exercise and all sorts of things that are meant to create a healthier physical body. And for us, all of that is extremely important. However, focusing on those alone, as I think most of us know, doesn't necessarily make us happier or improve our quality of life as a whole. So what would? For us in process work and process-oriented psychology, illness can be an indication to take care of your body, of course, your body problems, take care of our physical bodies in general, and being free of disease can, of course, be really wonderful and very important. However, at the same time, illness or symptoms can have great meaning. They're not just sickness or pathological, but there's an incredible amount of meaning that we can find in them that can be useful in our lives. And to tell you a little bit about where this thinking comes from, Jai mentioned a little bit about it. I'll add to that. In the early 1970s, when Arnie, you should probably be saying this, but I am in the moment. When Arnie was developing process work in the early 1970s, he had studied science and was a Jungian analyst teaching and practicing Jungian psychology in Switzerland. And I joined him in the early 80s, as well as many others. Some of them are here tonight from many parts of the world. And some of you know that Carl Jung spoke about the meaningfulness of dreams. The dreams weren't just a sign of pathology, but they had a great meaning inside of them, or a teleology, as he called them. And at the time, Jung wasn't working with the body, and Arnie decided to go further and work with his own body symptoms and with many people who were ill and dying that he was in contact with, who wanted to find out more about the meaning of their inner experiences. And that was really the beginning of process work. So Arnie began to explore people's experiences of their body symptoms and had amazing discoveries, one of which was that symptoms indeed were meaningful. And if people connected to that meaning, they felt better and their quality of life seemed to improve as well. And at the same time, Arnie discovered that people's experiences of their body symptoms were also connected to their dreams, that the kinds of body experience that we have are mirrored in the dream images that we have at night. And that led to the discovery of the idea of the dream body, this mirror connection between our subjective experiences of our body symptoms and the kind of images that we have in our nighttime dreams. So I'd love to share with you a kind of brief example to try to illustrate something about the meaning behind symptoms and the dream body concept. And I'll show you some pictures that I created as well. Some of you may be familiar with this example because I made a video out of it to try to illustrate this example. Okay. Mm-hmm. Let's consider a woman that Arnie and I worked with in a seminar. Well, let's call her Anna. She said it was okay to talk about her process. And I'll mention one phase of her work, and Arnie's then going to go on and mention another phase. So, let's see. Anna is a Spanish woman. She's from Spain. And she described herself, when she described her identity, how she identifies herself, she says she's quite spiritual and pretty shy and inward, and she feels often kind of inhibited in relationships. It's hard for her to bring herself out in her interactions with other people. And Anna complained, the body symptom that she was interested in was she had a pressure in her chest and a kind of thumping feeling or palpitations in her heart area. And she had checked all of that out medically, and as far as the doctors could discern, she was okay. They couldn't find anything seriously wrong with her. But it still bothered her, and she wanted to find out what was the meaning, perhaps, or the psychological meaning of what she was experiencing in her body. And here is my drawing somewhere. Oh. They're kind of strange drawings, probably, but it was the best I could do, of Anna showing where her body symptom, I hope you can see that we made it as big as possible, showing the area where she felt her heart symptom, her pressure and the sense of thumping or palpitations. Thanks, Ari. And we asked her then, she had different experiences in that area, so we asked her, what aspect of your body symptom would you like to focus on? Oh, thank you. That works. Mm-hmm. Pretty good. And she said she'd like to focus, the thing that was bothering her the most in the moment was her experience of pressure in her chest. So we asked her to meditate on what that was like and then to show us what was that experience of pressure in her chest like. And she meditated for a moment, and then she made these motions with her hands, which surprised me. I thought she'd go like this, but she actually went like that, as if something inside of her, I made a picture of that too, was pressing outward from inside of her chest, kind of coming, pressing out like that. Ernie's going to show the picture of that. My drawings. Thank you. And as she meditated on that further, she felt it, and then she said, oh, it feels like something is wanting to burst out of my chest and be free, like that. Mm-hmm. And so we encouraged her to meditate on that experience and feel what that was like for something to want to burst out. And as she did that, she pushed outwards a little bit, and then she suddenly had an image. She had a picture, and the image was of horses galloping. She said, I'm pushing outward, and I suddenly see an image of horses galloping freely in a field, just being very free and flowing and just galloping. And I tried to make a picture. I don't know if you can see the horses down here in her chest to show this overlap of her body symptom area and the experience, the actual experience she was having in there.
No, that's quite actually amazing, because you see she's having experience of horses, which are in another area inside her body. Mm-hmm. You could call it a projection or a non-local experience, beginning of non-local experiences.
Oh, that's good. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Mm-hmm. You know, Arnie will talk about non-locality shortly. Mm-hmm. Okay. And as she started to imagine these horses galloping like that, she said, oh, and now I hear them galloping. She was having an auditory experience of them galloping. She heard, I don't know how horses gallop. How do they gallop? Does anybody know? Thank you. Thank you. Like... And in that moment, Arnie and I thought, made a connection in our heads and thought, oh, that stir, however horses gallop, reminded us of that thumping and feeling in her heart and the heart palpitation she was having, that there was a connection there. Thank you for helping. And as we worked further with her, she continued to imagine the horses and began to spontaneously make those motions herself, and even felt herself for a little while as if she was kind of free and abandoned, that she was like a horse galloping on the field. And I made a picture of that too. Something like that. As if she was either running with the horses, or she then sort of became like a horse herself running in the field. Mm-hmm. And she said, oh, gosh. She realized she had this incredible longing for that feeling. That she longed to have a sense of kind of coming out of herself and be, and be free and independent, even a little wild, and a little bit extroverted. And not, and especially she said, oh, and if I was like that, I wouldn't care so much what people thought of me. Earlier she had been very shy about that, but she would be a little more abandoned. And not care much what people thought of her. And then she said, I realized that actually that experience is not so unknown to me. When I was a child, she said, I actually had that feeling of being independent and free and not caring so much about people's thoughts about her. But she had lost contact with that experience in herself as she had gotten older. So let me say here that her body symptom wasn't only pathological, but contained a great deal of meaning and wisdom by finding out what she was experiencing it and unfolding it. That is, the thumping in her heart and the pressing outward was the beginning of a very important part of her that wanted to express itself and that she wanted more contact with. And now let's think about the dream body. Those of you who know this video know what she dreamed. What did she dream? Anna dreamed about the American actor Clint Eastwood. And when we asked her, well, what do you associate to Clint Eastwood? She's from Spain. She's not from the United States. She said, oh, he's typically American. He's very independent and goes his own way no matter what people think of him. And then she laughed and she said, of course, he rides horses also. So here you can see the connection between her body experience of that sense of freedom and independence of the horses and that dream of Clint Eastwood and his sense of independence and not caring so much about others, in her opinion. And that's the idea of the dream body, her body experience and that feeling mirrored what she was dreaming at night about him. We worked more on things. This just gives you a little idea of the meaning and the behind symptoms in the dream body. And Arnie's going to talk about a whole other phase of her work as well. So, just before Arnie continues, we thought it might be nice to give everybody a chance to connect just for a couple of minutes with one of your own body symptoms, not going all the way to the dream body idea, but get a sense of one of the energies inside of one of your symptoms. And then we'll go further with it even later. So we know it's not a typical thing necessarily to do in a lecture, but we thought it's important that you have a little bit of inner experience about the kinds of things we're talking about, not just talking about things. So if that's okay with you, I'd love to lead you through. It's just about a 2-minute inner exercise to feel one of your body symptom energies, and then Arnie will go on. Mm-hmm. Okay. So if you can find a... She's getting free, I guess. if you can find a... She's really free. Our tape doesn't work very well. Or she's freeing herself. Mm-hmm. I can take it then.
Go ahead, Amy.
So if you want to take a moment to just relax and find a position that's comfortable, if it's possible, here in the room. And while you're doing that, choose a body symptom that you'd like to know more about. It can be a symptom that you feel now and that you have in the moment, or a symptom that you felt in the past that you'd like to explore for a couple of minutes. Mm-hmm. Choose a body symptom that you feel now or felt in the past that you'd like to know a little bit more about. Mm-hmm. Any kind of symptom that's on your mind that you can feel or felt previously. Okay. And now recall that symptom and its feeling, its body feeling, and remember or sense, feel, or imagine the energy or the experience of that symptom that is or was in the past most disturbing for you. For example, maybe it was a sharp pain or a kind of cramping or a jitteriness or a burning or... There's many things. Mm-hmm. Okay. See if you can identify the energy of the symptom that was most disturbing for you, that upset you the most. Mm-hmm. And when you have a kind of sense of that disturbing energy, use one of your hands to make a little motion to describe that disturbing energy whether it's poking or pressing or cramping or all these things symptoms do. Mm-hmm. Describe that disturbing energy with a little hand motion, if you can. To get a sense of what the energy of that disturbing mm-hmm. thing was like. Okay. And to make that easy, we're going to call that difficult energy X, which Arnie will refer to in a moment. Okay. And now ask yourself, what part of you doesn't like that energy that you just made, that disturbing energy or experience? What part of you is against that type of energy? Mm-hmm. And what is that part of you like? It would be quite different, probably, than the disturbing energy. And when you have a sense of that part of you that didn't like that earlier X energy, see if you can make a hand motion that describes it's that part of you, the energy of that part of you. Okay. Just to get a feeling for what its energy is like. We'll call that a little you, which Arnie will talk about shortly. Okay. Mm-hmm. Or not? Or do you just want to go on?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And maybe you want to, if you have paper, you can make a little note about the first, we called it the X, the disturbing energy, and the other is the you, which is the one who's disturbed. Or just a mental note about it, then Arnie will go further.
Yeah, we can share that with one another when we go second part, I think. Yeah. So, what do we see here? What did Amy really show us? And what do you know about yourself? Namely, that we're all working with diversity issues. Hmm. There's two energies. Here's one part of her is very quiet and inward. And this other part of her is more like the galloping horse, however you describe that. It's a diversity issue, an internal diversity issue. And so I'm talking about body symptoms, but I'm also talking about sociology at the same time. Mm-hmm. That what bothers us inside is found or projected upon or discovered or also irritates us outside. We're not at one with ourselves. So already at this point, knowing yourself, you know that people who represent an energy which is symptomatic for you, those people may be difficult. But in any case, I'd like to make four basic points, and we'll have another time for meditation in the middle. Before the end, I'd like to first talk further about meaning in medicine or teleology. Then I want to talk about the second point I'd like to talk about is rainbow medicine as a medicine umbrella. Has many different things under the umbrella. And then the third thing is I want to rediscuss with you what does holistic mean and what's its connection with synchronicity. That's the third point. And the fourth point is I'd like to give you some examples and we'll talk together about things. How's that sound?
Okay.
I think it's very interesting. You don't know what it's going to be yet. I understand. Okay. Right. By the way, although we're sitting in chairs and we're separated from one another, if something really occurs to you and we're separated in distance, I want to underline this, we're separated in distance but not in feeling. So if something's important to you, you can just say, hey, wait a minute, I want to ask a question. Also, we'll have time for questions at the end. Okay, is that okay with you?
She's already asked.
Okay?
Yeah.
Is that okay with you? Thank you. Yeah. Teleology. That's a fancy word that simply means meaning. Teleology means meaning. Teleological. I'll talk about that just now. I'll start off with that. Thanks for the question. Yeah. Yeah. So, as a student of physics, I was studying science in one way. And then when it came to, I wasn't quite satisfied, so I went further with my studies. And it was Zurich, so I found Jung and Jungian psychology. And there he applied the principle of teleology to dreams. That means that his teacher, Freud, had seen dreams not only but essentially as pathological, something that shows that it's demonstrating some form of problem, whereas Jung looked at this as meaningful. It's a teleological principle of meaning, and meaning in dreams was such an amazing thing to me. I loved that. My God, every morning I wake up still today, or in the middle of the night, I always, do you have one? You should carry your clicker with you,
voice recorder.
Dream book. What's that?
Voice recorder.
And record your dreams. It's so amazing. Well, some people, it wakes them up, they can't get back to sleep, so forget that. But otherwise, record your dreams, it's amazing. So there at night, I was dealing with something that is meaningful, teleology, waking up in the morning. Then I finished my Jungian studies, as some of you know. Then at the age of 30, I was done. And then I had all sorts of body symptoms. And then I went to the doctors, and wonderful people that they were, but they always looked at me very seriously. There was no longer any interest in meaning. I went into the door, and I said to one of the doctors, I still remember, I say, oh, I have a terrible pain in my foot. He looked at me like this. That didn't seem meaningful at all. That wasn't meaningful at all to him. What it meant was I was sick. And he was right. I mean, I had an early case of the gout, which he then insisted upon. I would have the rest of it. He said, I'm sorry, you have a very young case of the gout, and chances are you'll have that the rest of your life. He didn't say chances, and you'll have that the rest of your life. What did I do, you know? And he was really good. He was a good person and meant well. But he didn't say, what's happening in your foot? What's in there? Let's find out more about who are you as a person? What are you as a person that you're dealing with this pain now in your life? What about your life? Well, he had no training in that. I hadn't either. So we have to discover that together. And he did. 5 or 6 years later, when I understood the dream body, I went back and I told him. I said, Dr. So-and-so, actually, that pain has gone away. And the meaning of that was that I needed to suffer physically in order to understand that meaning mm-hmm. could also be helpful to people suffering physically. Mm-hmm. Now, he said to me the first time, I have to tell you the truth. And he swallowed once or twice, like I just did now. And he said, my cousin, Frau Dr. So-and-so. And I said, no. She? Yep, she. That was one of my teachers at the Jung Institute. So they'd always been having a conflict about this very problem. And I don't know exactly what happened to their relationship, but I felt better.
It got worse.
They were great people, terrific people. So the idea, though, was that as I studied that, I studied dreams and I studied physical things and body things. The idea is that these were two separate worlds. But that's where I was at the time. What you did at night was in your psyche. I'm putting my hands mainly on my head, but it was all around. And what happened during the day to your body, it was in your body. And Jung knew these two things were connected, but they were still two separate worlds. So the idea of the dream body implies that there's an overlap or a connection between those two separate worlds. So working with two worlds and not one world was already one of the main problems of medicine and psychology. How do we bring the worlds together a little bit closer? So the dream body idea came about, as Amy just implied. And the dream body idea came about by, if it stands You guys stay there for a moment. The dream body idea came about by following the person's experience, not just their diagnosis. Experience, what someone experiences, is still a horrendous thing. And the reason most professional people don't ask about experience is they don't know what to do with it if they find it. So it's understandable. You have to have also understanding that they haven't, people in medical school aren't yet taught enough about how to deal with experience, nor are psychologists taught enough about how to deal with the body and about some of its realistic and consensual aspects. Both things need to happen. So that was the dream body idea. And then imagine this. How exciting was this? After years of working with people around the late 1970s now, this was, I noticed that, as Jung had implied, childhood dreams, that means, or early childhood memories, seemed to be patterns that lasted a whole lifetime. So that what you remember from your earliest days is a pattern that goes along apparently and illuminates a great deal of what happens to you right straight through to the moment before death, and maybe, who knows, about beyond that. So there's a mythic background. So this idea made me look, is this energy, here's Anna's energy again, I'm pointing to Amy's picture of the galloping horse. We don't have enough time to talk about the details. You can find this problematic energy for her already in her childhood dream. Palpitations in the chest, which had apparently been with her all her life, more or less. You can find chronic symptoms are mapped out in your childhood dream. The X energy that bothers you, for example, today, if it's a chronic symptom you're talking about, chances are that chronic symptom is mapped out. You're dealing with these energies maybe over long periods of time. So the next step was to understand childhood dreams are that some of the chronic symptoms that you have are mythic in the sense of long-term patterns. Okay? Mm-hmm. Huh? Okay, no, just checking, yeah. Mm-hmm. Sometimes audiences are very different, you know. This feels like a very European audience, even though many of you are. In Europe, people don't usually say much when you speak. They're quieter. Is that true? Sometimes.
No.
No. Things change also, depending upon where in Europe you are. Excuse me. Yeah. So then the idea, what comes next? You can almost predict the development of this theory. So chronic symptoms and childhood dreams. Then I realized, well, if you to follow the body is not just the body, but you have to watch what people do with their fingers. Amy's sitting here and she's got her thumb on top of there, and I'm walking around, I'm all excited about something. Watch people's signals. So you can see almost as many of you know, a person's double signals, not their primary signals, but their double signals that they're not identified with are frequently found in their dreams. So you can read the dreams from people right off their body. For example, you could guess the fact that I constantly look down so much, even though I'm supposed to be talking with you directly, I look down, and that downward look that I have is characterized by some of my dreams, and you would also find it now in recent times. I have sort of low blood pressure, even though it was higher earlier. Now it's kind of low, and there's a quietness also underneath in the back. You can almost read somebody's signals and symptoms sometimes from their double signals. So that was the idea that now, my God, you signals and symptoms, and in other words, I thought, this is a paradigm shift. What am I doing? What's happening? I was going to draw here. I'll draw it over here. What's happening? At first, we're talking about dreams. That's too green, doesn't work. Dreams, and the body, but there's so much overlap and signals and connections. What is this thing here in the middle that's joining them? The idea that something joins two worlds is often the beginning of a paradigm shift. And the paradigm was process. The word process and channels was the paradigm shift I was looking for that would help me to begin with here. That instead of talking about dream or body, just talk about the signals that you see, like I just said. Okay, and then the next step after looking, okay with that, are you all right?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that exciting? I know you can't wait for the next step. I can't wait for the next step. Then I was reading and looking at people's signals. Then I started to say to myself, but these signals didn't just appear like that. They came from subtle feelings that were pre-signal experiences. So I started to ask my clients, I said, well, before you make this gesture, what were you doing? They said, well, I was making a little gesture. Well, what was in that little gesture? What was the essence of the signal? Getting down to smaller and smaller signals. And this idea of working with minimal signals or minimal cues, as Erickson called it, minimal signals or minimal cues began to interest me in the whole quantum world and gave me access to people who were in vegetative states of consciousness who weren't talking. This was a terrific breakthrough for me. You have to remember, I had been trained to work only with people sitting in chairs who were talking. This new work about working with subtle signals allowed me to work with people who were in comatose, vegetative, or remote states of consciousness. What luck I had. I thought, I'm going to try this. And so I went and worked in the hospitals, and as many of you know, interesting experiences came out, and I'll just report one of them. The one that happened some years back while I was working in a Miami hospice with somebody. You can read about this in my book on coma, but I'll say it just briefly now. So, okay, I'm working now with minimal signals. Not signals, but minimal signals. So this is all the development of meaning in medicine, right? Dream, body, now process, signals, now minimal signals. So I went to see this man. The nurses said, you've got to speak to Sam. Please work. They saw me do some good things with other people. They thought I would be able to work with him. How did I know what to do? I was just beginning. Anyway, Sam was there in bed, and he had been in the hospice a long time, and he was dying for ages. And kind of stuck, couldn't go one way or the other. And on top of being in that difficult state of consciousness, he was also moaning, and sometimes he would even yell. He'd come out of the state and make terrific noises. Whoa! He'd say things like that. The people would talk to him, but he'd go back right down underneath. So when I saw him, to begin with, Sam was in, I don't know why I'm looking at my own chair, probably because it's me I'm talking about. You're always talking about yourself. Sam was lying there in his bed, and I went to the side of his bed, and he was just going, and sometimes you couldn't hear him. It was more like, and so I went down near his ear like that, wondering if that was a signal. And occasionally he'd make this. So I went down there too with him, and I said, and suddenly he went, I got such a shock, I almost fell over. I went, my God, this guy is not just dying, he's also very lively. And I thought he might be, but you never know. And then he went, and I went, with him, and we worked with the signal at the signal level. I said, he went, and I said, whoa, whoa, whoa. And he went, wow, woo. And to make the story short, and you can read the details in my book on coma, make the story short, he then said, wow, a boat. And I said, a boat. And he said, yeah, a boat is coming for Sam. A big ship is coming for Sam. And I said, well, that sounds interesting.
No, no, he said, basically. And I said, why not? He says, I ain't got no time to take that boat. Oh. That was confusing to me. I didn't know what to do. Now, we were out of the signal rail. That was like a sentence. You haven't got time to take the boat? I don't know what made me guess. I said, well, how much does it cost? That was good. He said, wait a minute, I'll check that out. And he went back inside. And I said, what is it? That boat don't cost nothing. And I said, where's it going? That boat's going to Bermuda. I said, Bermuda for nothing? And he went, hmm. I went, hmm. And I said, who's driving that boat? And to make the story short, he goes back inside and he looks at him. He goes to the bottom of the boat. And he comes in. It's angels driving that boat. So I said, angels cost nothing, goes to Bermuda. Something to think about. I ain't got much time. I got to get up in the morning and start working. And I said, okay, well, let's think about it. And he said, And that's the last thing I heard from him. I went out and worked with somebody else. I came back, and let's say it this way.
He went to Bermuda.
Bermuda. And I witnessed many things like that again and again, that even in these minimal signals, as long as the brain, for sure, when the brain is in more or less intact, with these minimal signals, the person's dreaming, and when they express that dreaming, frequently, not every single time, but frequently, they're very relieved, and it relieves the family situation also, and relieves the person. Sometimes they just can take off and or go to the next step wherever they are. So minimal signals are very, very important, and it should interest you in your families and your friends. When you see somebody just go like this, I'm going to show you some minimal signals, and a person is like this. And I said, that's huge. There's a whole world behind this Like, one of the things I like about Amy so much is she makes that sound a lot. I go over there.
I do.
You do. Or a lot of you do. And especially many of you with Mediterranean backgrounds. You go over to one of you and you put your hand in the oven and go, like that. That in that is a whole world of feeling and love and the sense of home and all sorts of other things. I shouldn't just say what it is. Each person has to unfold it. Maybe sometimes it's, get out of here. Follow the signals is the point I'm trying to make.
Pictures. I'm going
to
take it down.
Oh, yeah, take that one down. She wants to come down.
Yeah.
Okay, I'd like to then say, now comes the most interesting moment. With these minimal signals, these tiny, tiny little signals, I began to realize, my goodness, we can no longer speak about just information theory. What is the signal before it's a signal? I began to restudy quantum physics and little tiny signals and different things of that sort. And the idea of non-local medicine came up. The idea of non-locality. Some of you interested in that can look it up on the web or look at my book, Quantum Mind. Thank you, Achim, for translating it into German. He just did that recently. But non-locality, yes, he's amazing. It's amazing that anybody reads that book. It's 600 pages. It's amazing anybody wrote that
book. It's amazing he's still sitting.
He's awesome. But began to think about non-local medicine and non-locality about the body from quantum physics. And I'll sketch just a very, very simple idea that gives you an idea in a quantum system or a physical system of one sort or another. If there's a particle over here and its brother or sister particle is over here. Their spin is balanced. The direction, let's say, is balanced.
So the overall spin is zero, the overall direction is nothing. But the amazing thing is that even though we don't know what's going on in between.
You take it down. Our tape is not working.
I love these assistant helps that occur here. Even though we don't, as many of you know, even though we don't really know what's going on in between, if you look away and you look back at the system again at another point, this one may be down. Then this one, you know, even if that's 150 miles away or in principle on the other side of the universe, if this one is down, that one has to be up. You look away again, you look back, you don't know what it's going to be ahead of time. This one is up, that one's going to be down. And the idea is here, we're talking about, remember, a few minutes ago, an energy that bothers you. Let's call it the X. If you change, if something inside of you changes, it's possible that there are not just local, but non-local connections with something inside of you which changes, and people you identify with, that X may also change. In other words, if this is her X over here, and I use the word X because it's an energy that you've divorced usually, use the word X. That's her X energy. Because the energy that you've X'd or divorced inside of you is almost always a projected onto a problematical person or a relationship. The energies that you have trouble with in your body are energies you have trouble with around the world. And by changing your attitude towards your own ex, you might feel a little bit better. And it is possible that non-local effects also happen with people who you, upon whom you projected or experienced or share that ex with. I'll talk more about that in a minute. Non-local medicine, work on yourself and you feel better, and it's possible that if you, as you open up to your energies, people that you've associated with those energies possibly, call it possibly, also may sense something and change as you change at a distance. I don't have enough evidence to say that's a fact, but anecdotally, that means over the dozens and dozens of things that I've experienced over the years, that's something for us to keep in our back pocket, that they may well be the case. I'll talk about synchronicity in a minute. So, in any case, this U and X present us with quite a huge problem. They're internal, that refers to external relationship problems. They're inside and they're outside. And we've tried a lot to see how can we help people work on their own diversity issue. This is an unending research project. How can we help you get along better with energies inside of you that you tend to divorce? It's important to take distance from energies that you feel upset with or that have been traumatic for you. That makes 100% sense. You need to have distance. On the other hand, you need some access to those energies in order to be, let's say, to feel better and to feel more secure about yourself. How do we do that? And Anna is a good example of this. In recent times, we've used something called the process mind. Is it getting warm in here? A little bit, yeah. We started talking about all of these different methods, and which method you use, by the way, which method you use of working with the body depends upon the individual. So if some people are good at one method and they're weaker at other methods. But those who can meditate or have had some experience with meditation, the process mind idea has been very, very helpful as something that helps to put this U and X together, process mind. And here's an example of the process. Let me first introduce it, then I'll show it. Mm-hmm. The process mind, I know that I'm saying introducing a lot of ideas all at the same time. Are you more or less with me? Lucky me. Thank God you're in a decent mood. Aha, no, there's somebody in me that isn't in a good mood. I just heard that. So he says, you're saying a lot of things all at once, Arnie. Why do you, can't you stop once and just let everybody? And the answer to him is, that is true, and I'm going to give you lots of time to ask questions afterwards. Huh. Okay, I'll wait. You have to talk to yourself, you know, sometimes. Process mind is your deepest self, and as many of you know, it's something that has been projected upon or found or discovered early on by native peoples around the world, and especially Aboriginal Australians, to whom I'm very grateful to, for having said that the deepest part of you may be related to a piece of earth from which you came. The Australians see that as actually a specific piece of earth that gave birth to you. It's an amazing thought. And it's an incredible thought because the earth itself has a wonderful diversity to it. Like, for example, Amy's client, we asked her in a seminar, and she let Amy make a picture out of this. You can hold it.
I can tape it up. After.
What's that?
I can tape it up after.
We'll tape it up afterwards, okay. Can you see this picture? Let's put it over here, Amy.
Okay. I have better tape, thank God.
We asked her, what is her favorite piece of earth? And maybe you put one on the side here, too.
Yeah.
What is your favorite piece of earth? And Anna said her favorite piece of earth, this is a piece of the Mediterranean right near, I won't say the city exactly, this is a piece of the Mediterranean. And we asked her, well, do you see this you and this X energy, remember, her very introverted side and her more extroverted, wild, galloping side. You see these energies around this process mind spot. See, this earth piece itself, we're referring to this whole piece of earth, the water, and this planetary spot we're calling her process mind spot. And she said, yes, here in the deep sea further out is more like the quiet part of me. And the Mediterranean, as it splashes upon the shores here of Spain, where she lived, that's more like the galloping part of me. So by getting her to feel the process mind area, oh, I'm making a sound for it. Oh, one part of it is, the other part of it is, way out at sea is sort of, she didn't make these sounds. I'm doing this, projecting onto her a little bit to make a point. She was meditated upon the earth spot, and the earth spot way at sea is, and the other part of her that is very near the shore and more extra, da 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 da, da da da. And the point here is that the sea showed her in an inner experience that these two energies are not split, but that they belong to one another. They're in one world. This is the one world idea, the process mind. The sea sometimes is quiet, and it seems so obvious, sometimes quiet, and sometimes outgoing. So this gave her an inner sense that sometimes she's just shy and inward, what she called spiritual, and other times, and that that the spiritual part of her was also in the extroverted galloping, what she called the American Clint Eastwood part of her. So they weren't split. They didn't have to be divorced from one another. They're part of one process. So this is what I call feeling better. She could suddenly see, I don't have to work at this all the time. I don't have to fight them. They're both there together. Mm-hmm. Now, instead of talking about that, let's give you an exercise where you can try to experience that yourself. Remember, there are many ways to work with the body, and this meditative method that we're now going to use seems to work with many people who can meditate, have some meditation ability. It only takes a couple of minutes. Do you want to try it?
Yes.
Okay, no, thank you. Okay.
You
don't have
That's
to
lucky.
Say no.
I know. I don't know what we do. We'd skip to something else.
Yes.
I think we have feedback.
Go
okay.
ahead, yeah. Amy will lead us in that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All you have to do is first, again, sit as comfortably as you can here. And if you can remember the little inner work that we did earlier, we chose a body symptom that we could feel now or felt in the past, and focused on, first we focus on the most disturbing energy, and you made a hand motion with that. You might remember the hand motion that you made to describe that difficult energy. Yeah. And also recall the part of you that didn't like that disturbing energy and what its energy was like. Maybe you'll remember the hand motion that you made for that part of you as well. Okay. Right. Okay. And now we're going to try to find an aspect of our process mind and see how it might deal with both of these. And the way to do that, there's many ways to do it, but why don't you think for a moment of an earth spot, some spot on the earth that you love the most. You might have many of them, of course, but see if you can choose one that pops up right now that seems really special to you. It could be near the sea, like Anna, or maybe it's in a forest, or it could be right in the middle of a city, or mountains, whatever, or a lake, whatever is a special earth spot for you. Just choose one. Mm-hmm. And when you found that spot, imagine that you go there, and you're actually sitting or standing right in that special earth spot for you. And kind of sense the atmosphere and the feeling all around that special earth spot. And even use your breath to kind of breathe into that spot that might help you to even feel that area a little bit more. And as you're kind of breathing into that spot and feeling the whole area, look around that earth spot and ask if the two energies, the X disturbing energy and the U energy that was disturbed by it, are represented in that area in some way. Mm-hmm. It could be like parts of nature, like you saw with Anna, one part may be very wild, a part of nature, and another may be quiet. Or maybe you'll notice one of the energy in the winds or the rocks or the buildings. See if you can sense the X and the U energy represented in some different aspects of that earth spot. It may contain both of them. And once you've found that, use your breath to breathe once again into that earth spot a little bit and see if you can sense the power. Every earth spot has a kind of power feeling to it. Sense its power. And perhaps you can let the power of that earth spot just move you a little bit in your chair. You'll sense the power of the earth moving you a little bit. Even as you feel yourself kind of becoming that earth spot yourself, that you are that earth spot in some way. And finally, let the power of that spot begin to show you how to go back and forth between those two energies that you were working with. Perhaps it'll express one in your imagination. and then it'll express the other. And just take your time to let to explore that the earth going back and forth, expressing one energy and the other, and perhaps showing you how to flow back and forth or deal with the relationship between those two very different energies. How does it flow between one energy to the other?
Okay.
And if you have a little sense of that, you might make an inner note or even a note on your paper, if you like, about what the earth did between those energies.
Sometimes you need more time. Letting the earth just swing you and move you, see how it relates those energies. And when you get a hunch of that, make a note on paper or a mental note someplace.
We really need more time for that, but that might give you a little bit of a hint about it.
Okay, I'll wait another few seconds and then we'll go on. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Great.
We didn't have time to share.
Well, that might be a really important thing. If you could get something out of that, thank you, Amy, for reminding me of that. If you found something about how your process mind area or one of your favorite spots was able to give you a hint or relate those two parts of you, those two energies, mention it to someone near you that helps to keep it in your mind, and you'll dream further about it. Just take a minute and each mention that to someone near you if you found something that could be said. Go ahead and turn to somebody
we'll
and do that now. Then I'll go on, yeah.
I didn't know if you wanted to. Right. These are all from there. I didn't know if you wanted to do that.
I love that. That's so awesome. It's sweet to play with.
Another half hour. We're doing okay.
That's good. That's good. Look around.
David Jones back there. Sorry, I know you need, we were in debate about doing that as it needs more time and you need to stand and really meditate on that, but at least that can give you some of you a hint about how that might go. There's a couple of more things I'd still like to say this evening I want to talk about. Now, rainbow medicine and holism, and give you some examples, and then we'll have time for questions. Is that okay with you? Thank you. Well, now, all of these methods, you know, using the process mind, and there's vector ways of working, and there's looking at the non-locality and the essence of symptoms, and all these various methods lead to, and the idea that there's a paradigm shift going on, give you the idea of that, I'll use this board maybe, that process theory process theory with its idea of signals that can be seen and issues that can be discussed, real problem, real in the sense of consensus reality, real things that can be worked on and talked about, plus the idea, this is one level, it's consensus reality level, the idea of dreams and dreaming, things that can't quite be seen but can be noticed at their nano level or essence level, some of which may be non-local, that's dreaming. And this essence level or the intelligence behind the essence level, which I've been calling the process mind, this theory, this is a process, this is sort of process theory, this process theory may, it has suddenly, you begin to think about it, process theory has, is really a multidisciplinary idea that it applies to process-oriented psychology. As we know, process theory, however, also applies to process-oriented ecology, E for ecology. And now ecology and psychology should be overlapping, R also applies to what I'm going to now talk about, is rainbow medicine. Rainbow medicine, as well as other things such as science, the sciences and arts. Process work theory has a fairly wide application. Political things, world work, as many of you know. So we're dealing with something which we hope will have a unifying effect, not just on the way we think, but also on a broad spectrum of applications. And rainbow medicine means simply that you use rainbow medicine in the sense that I've been using it, means that you use what I was calling consensus reality methods, those methods that are tried, proven, and experimentally seen, and that can be shown in a physics laboratory or a medical laboratory or in medicine. But it also, rainbow medicine also applies to the world of dreams and dreaming and deep experience. And rainbow medicine also applies to these unifying senses. I'm going to call it process mind or even a spiritual area. People have known for centuries that if you have some connection with some infinite sense of whatever you call it, that frequently you can feel that you feel better and you can get across barriers that you might not otherwise get across. And the spiritual side of things frequently comes up, not always, but frequently, especially near death. But it's always there. So rainbow medicine means all of these things, but in practice it means that's a theory I'm talking about. But in practice, rainbow medicine means follow the individual. Some people say and feel better need actual, they have a headache, take an aspirin. You've got a problem that can be solved by conventional medicine, do it, please. Some people aren't satisfied with that, or the conventional medicine doesn't work very well. They may need to go deeper and find out about this energy that they're doing. Anyone who, if you're a physician, anyone who comes into your practice is bringing a diversity issue with them. So you as a physician or your nurse helpers or whoever should welcome that diversity issue and say, let's talk about what kind of energies are you working with these days? How will you deal with the diversity stuff that's going on? Even if we manage to heal your symptom, what are you going to do about that conflict inside of you that has to do with those energies that are now better for the moment but may appear again, especially if they're long-term energies? Imagine in rainbow medicine somebody saying to you, if you've had this particular symptom, please watch out for this kind of relationship problem. Imagine you go to a doctor and the doctor tells you, Think about your relationships. It's another world. It's not another world. It's this world. I want it to be this world. Mm-hmm. And imagine that a therapist, you go to a therapist with a relationship problem, you complain about a pain here or there, and the person also says, don't forget, that could be something that you may want to deal with in a more allopathic or alternative medical procedure. Please think about those things. So in practice, it means following the individual, their particular symptoms, and personal description of the symptom. How does somebody speak about the symptom? So it can be that allopathic medicine, standard medicine, might be the person's whole process at a given moment. Being process-oriented means, yes, you have a keratosis or a little skin something, you want to get it burned off, please do that. If that's not enough, that's a person's process. If it's not enough, you want to know more about your skin and the experiences behind your skin, then go deeper into the dreaming and what have you. And if you're blocked and people can't get deeper with their own internal diversity issues, then use your process mind. Go to these meditative procedures we've just been introducing. So what does this mean? If you've got something wrong with your stomach or your heart or your head or something like that, are you sick? And the answer is, it's a viewpoint. From the viewpoint of conventional medicine, you can say, yes, you've got something. Maybe you want to check it out. It's a diagnosis. Check it out. Are you ill? From the viewpoint of dreaming, are you ill if you have a symptom? And the answer is, well, your dreams may say one thing or another, but for sure you have a diversity issue. And it's this diversity issue I'm really underlining tonight very much. Mm-hmm. So that if you've got a medical problem, you need to solve your internal diversity issue or try to work with it. And you need to work with it in relationships as best you can. And you need to work with it in the world. Doing it at only one level will probably never be totally satisfactory for everybody. Do it as many places as you can. Non-locality. And I want to say something again that is at the cutting edge of what I have enough information to actually prove. I wait till I have at least 100 cases of something like this. Where I would say, someone, let's say Anna, and I've seen this many times, works on her diversity issue. She uses her process mind, and she begins to feel better about this part of her, which is galloping like this. And of course, her worst enemy looks just like that energy. Yours too. I guarantee that the people you dislike most are just like the energy that you don't get along with in your body is now. And so you can work things out with them one way or the other. But the thing I want to say that's the cutting edge of research right now, at least in my mind, is that for some weird reason, this non-local connection behind the picture, which I can't...
Sorry.
It's behind the picture.
I taped it too well.
Leave it be. It's behind the picture. That if just this you opens up to this X, just this one changes, not this. If this side of you changes and you open up a little bit to your energies, sometimes amazing effects happen at a distance with friends you thought you'd never talk to again. I don't want to guarantee it, but I want to guarantee it, actually. I'm split about it because I don't have... But I want to say, it's surely good for you. It can't hurt the relationship. And we have enough... We have a lot of evidence that indicates that just you changing here... Remember those things in the back that are entangled? It could be that these energies inside of you which are entangled actually work non-locally with things at a distance as well. I sure think so after my own personal experiences. So... I want to indicate that rainbow medicine is holistic. Holism has been overused by New Age people to some extent and lost the meaning of it. But the holism for me means that I do. I must take Anna down for a minute. No, she doesn't want to move.
No, she can't move. May she stay.
I know when I've met my match, and Anna is my match. I'll draw this again. That holism means that this is, let's say, a norm. In that box describes some sort of system. What happens inside this system, we know, if there's a lot of different things, there's not just these two energies that we're working with, but many different things, what happens in that system is a complexity business. It has to do with, you can use, think of complexity theory and chaos theory. The process mind is another way of dealing with complexity. That your whole life, all the parts of your life, may well be organized by this. Not determined. We can't say when or what will happen to you, but we can say pretty well there's a mythic basis to you, a process mind basis, and the kinds of things that happen in your life are organized. That's what I mean by holistic. The whole organizes the parts. And we've seen that already with childhood dreams and their connections with the process mind. Holism means that there's a field in here. And Niels Bohr and the physicist Niels Bohr, many folks, and David Bohm and many other physicists today speak about no one understands really exactly, can explain what this non-local connection is about. But these physicists, and I joined them in this, spoke about something called quantum holism. And they thought many things. They thought there's something like a wave function in here, and that wave function shows there's some sort of binding, some sort of coherence, something that keeps, that makes the whole system entangled. Nobody knows exactly what that is. I'm saying human experience indicates that there's a piece of earth that organizes us. And in this sense, rainbow medicine is holistic. That whether you apply dream work or medicine or relationship work, all sorts of ways of working with people in relationship. I still remember years ago going to Africa, and now I understand for the first time after all these years, we were in Africa and we went and got a healing with an African shaman, and she goes into this altar and say, and she said, there's a certain person bothering you. Mm-hmm. Boy, was she right. She was really smart. She said, should I do something to that person? No. But I now understand, where did that theory come from? That is almost as old as the human race. Somebody, you got a body problem, let me do a little something to that person over there and you'll feel better. I don't want to say more about that right now, except that that must have been based upon the fact that people noticed that relationships, even at a distance, can influence your body experiences. Something to think about. Yeah, ooh. Work on your relationship stuff. Arnie, don't forget you too. So holistic is, if C.G. Jung were here, and I do feel he's here right now, C.G. Jung would have said, was meinst du Synchronicität? Jung would have said, what did I say?
Do you mean synchronicity?
What do you mean? Is that synchronicity you're talking about? Jung said, synchronicity? That means you dream about some part of you, and that part that's inside is suddenly outside and changes as well? Synchronicity? Yo, almost. I would say CG. What I'm thinking about synchronicity is closer to this entanglement phenomena. It's not just one part which creates that, which is the core thing in synchronicity, but two parts. There's a U and an X. It's entangled. If you change a little, that part changes. So we don't need to destroy or go after it with allopathic medicine to take that part down and to make it easier to deal with only. you're very opening up to your own X energies. Opening up to them can improve relationships and make you feel better. We don't have to, it's just not one thing, but two things. What Jung thought was one thing going out in the world, really, it's the relationship that's synchronistic. You and an X in there. So we're getting close to the time for questions and what have you. So let me just give you an example and then I'll stop. Whew, it's a lot of things to talk about tonight. Mm-hmm. Well, any one of these things would have been enough for a lecture, I think, actually. Are you with me? Are you at least halfway with me? Oh, thank you. That's great. Well, let's think, as an example of all of this, let's just think about allergies. Okay? Now, how many of you have had an allergy at one time or another in your life? Look at that.
Oh, my God. Oh. Epidemic.
Allergies are epidemic. That is right. Allergies are amazing. And as you know, allergies come from the Greek word allos, or other. So you're hypersensitive to the other. Now you can see where I'm going already, I'm sure. There's a relationship problem. But we know there are real reasons, real environmental candidates and changes that create allergies or co-create allergies in exposure to infectious diseases in early childhood make you more allergic. Environmental pollution makes you more allergic. Allergen levels going up can make you allergic. Dietary changes. There's many, and there's several other things. And I want to say, being allergic to the atmosphere, I want to add that as a fifth reason for allergy. And it's Amy herself who taught me this. I told this once in a lecture in Portland, but let me repeat it again. Mm-hmm. Amy and I were going to go, we had to work someplace where there was a lot of tension. And I didn't think about it much myself, but Amy reminded me as soon as we got on the airplane, she started sneezing in such a way that I thought the airplane would crash.
Wow, powerful.
She's a very strong woman. And she was sneezing away and sneezing away until we got to a particular place. We work in different places in the world. We went around, and this one place we got to, there was somebody who was really very, very, some group that was very, very rough and tough. And as we worked with them, and the relationship with them got better, her allergy started to get better. Mm-hmm. And she still had a few little sneezes. But by the time we got back to Portland, we landed in Portland, and it was allergy season by that time. And the flowers were blooming, and we came up underneath the tree outside our apartment here in Portland, and suddenly Amy's allergies disappeared. Every year that I've known her for the last, how long have we known each other? Don't okay. ask.
30 years.
30 years. She's been allergic every year. This year, there was no allergy. Mm-hmm. I mean, when we got to Portland. Mm-hmm. I realized
we live right under this tree that makes me so allergic. I go crazy every year.
You really do.
Here. I do. I know it.
But temporarily, at least, your relationship with that X thing that you were afraid of—let's call—I'm using this Anna's picture here for everything. Mm-hmm. That X energy was it that we could have been? It makes it easier for you that we are allergic to a particular energy. As well. And I won't go into the details about that. Let me just suggest that to you. That all symptoms, in a way, are allergies to a particular energy. Besides having physical, chemical, and all sorts of historical roots, your symptoms may also just be a description of an allergy in the largest sense to a particular energy that you're working with. Mm-hmm. That's always something to keep in your back pocket. I can give you a lot of examples of that. Mm-hmm. So it's a global war of forces that you have. Now, this is one of the reasons why it's important if you are interested in medicine and interested in your body that you take your work on facilitating your own energies out in the world. Why is it that Sam was stuck at the end of his life between this spiritual thing and the work thing. Why was his spirituality, and I found out afterwards from his family that he was actually a very spiritual person, why is that spirituality and his need to make money so split? What's the sociological situation for that man? What did poverty do to him? What's the relationship between his spirit, the sense of poverty, and the difficulties he had in his life? Social issues, personal issues, even right up to the end of life. The inner thing you're working with is a social thing as well. That is the thing I'm trying to say. That work with yourself, and as if you have some courage, work on the stuff in your family systems and out in the world as well.
Maybe
as
I
possible.
Can just add about, you talked about my allergies. Maybe I can
yes, please
throw in there and clarify that. I think that I was really nervous and anticipating this really rough situation that we were going to be meeting, which we met, and it came out okay, but I felt I was working on myself the whole time on could I pick up that rough energy myself, which isn't the thing I identify with normally. And I was working on it. I felt I had more access to it, and I think that's one of the reasons when I came back that I wasn't as allergic as I had been.
You worked on yourself.
Yeah.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. But think about that, though, the outer world situation of that. Think of Anna. Think of what's the relationship with her her heart palpitations and the behavior of the United States government. Oh, Nobody thought of that. Clint Eastwood, let's go conquer everybody. We're independent and we are the strongest and the best. Well, I know not every American thinks that way. But that's an American image out in the world. What does that do to her? What does she feel as a Spanish woman? Well, she has that power, too, and all the rest of it. I just want to say that what's bothering you in your body is a global issue. That's one of my main points. And so, therefore, let me just say one more sentence to finish up, and that is to feel best, take your body reasonably as a physical being. If there's something you know about it, to make it feel better physically, do it. But don't forget your dreaming. Don't forget your dreaming. Be nature and all her parts, not just one of them. That's all I have to say then this evening. Now let's just thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, questions.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Whew, I said a lot of things. Thank you. And we wanted to save time, not just to talk, but to hear you also come back with questions and insights and your ideas about things. Let's talk together. Let's make a think tank together. Mm-hmm. Think tank, that means that we all can think together. Is anyone thinking here, or are they just feeling?
Anybody think?
If you had the courage to ask a question, what question would you ask?
You mentioned the word channels in the development of your theory.
Yeah.
But you just mentioned it, and I was wondering if you could say a little bit more of where that fit in terms of signal development.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, channel theory, the idea is that information flows. Simplest way is if information needs to reach a receiver, you're a sender, and it can flow through various different channels. And some of them, as far as talking just about human beings are concerned, our senses are like channels. Like, for example, proprioception is a body channel.
Body feeling,
thank you. Mm-hmm. Proprioception, body feeling. Or you can visualize something. Seeing is a sense channel, sensory grounded channel. So the dream body is a proprioception visual overlap. And they also have sound and many other channels. So I was referring to sensory channels. Yeah. Thanks for that. Yeah. Yeah. Who's that? Hi.
Hi.
Yes. Sorry. Suzette, could you follow what I was saying about how what's inside is also out there?
Yes, and that's a little bit of my question,
right,
too, which is about when you've talked about co-creation with, like when you're working on yourself and your body, something that you're creating with the essence world, something new, or is that right?
Yes, when you work deeply mm-hmm. with your body, especially with your process mind, then it operates cognitively, but a bit non-cognitively, too. It's a sort of dreamlike feeling, helps you to put these two things together, is what I was referring to.
Mm-hmm.
And if you consciously work with your process mind and your various diversity issues that appear in your symptoms, you feel better, and your relationships might be better, too. You'll have more openness to people who remind you of energies you don't like. Mm-hmm. That's what I was trying to say.
Can I just add to that?
Yeah.
That I think Arnie would say that usually we have these two energies, and they are so antagonistic to each other. Usually we experience them more as destructive, and the creating together is not as comfortable, let's say. But if we can pick them up and work with them, like you were just saying, all kinds of new creative things, new relationships, new possibilities are possible. We don't have to get rid of them. They're actually there to create new kinds of things for ourselves and for the world.
The atmosphere, thanks, Ames.
Mm-hmm.
This process mind is like the atmosphere around us and between family systems. Also, you can work with the family system symptom of one person by working on the atmosphere of the families. For example, this couple that I talked about, I've spoken about also in one of my Portland classes. My child came to see me who had asthma. And the child was coughing. And when he went, he came in the room, and he went like this. And he spit. So.
At you?
He spit at me. He spit at the floor. So I spit too. And everybody was upset. He was happy, and he looked like he was going to get better. But to make the story very short, just spitting, by the way, by itself, the allowance to spit when somebody is spitting can have an incredibly powerful effect.
Mm-hmm.
But more interesting in the moment is that that made him feel better. But what made him permanently feel better was what the atmosphere between the people in the room is something I hadn't been focusing on yet.
Mm-hmm.
I was focusing on him, but there was his mother and his father. Mm-hmm. And he came back, and we spit a little bit, and he always felt better. But he came back again. They both sat there, and I never saw that he was sitting near the door, the so-called father, and the mother was sitting with the child near me, and I was ignoring that. Then suddenly I realized, my God, they're far apart. And maybe there's a bad atmosphere in here. So one day, anyhow, I said, well, what do you think? Is there something going on in this relationship here? He's near the door. Does he want to go?
The father.
And the father, or not. The mother wasn't quite happy with what was going on, and neither was the father. They decided to split, and the child's asthma went away. The atmosphere that we live in is incredibly powerful. I just want to say that. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, Vasiliki?
I want to ask, let's say, okay, if you're a therapist, people come in your private practice and you work with them.
Yes.
But let's say you enter a home, you're invited to a family.
Yeah.
And the atmosphere is very toxic or very difficult in there.
For me?
Yeah, for you.
People seem to be able to live in that. I often can't live in the atmosphere other people
exactly.
do.
Exactly, and you have to live for some time. Or
yeah.
How would you...
That's a projection, by the way. I mean, I managed to grow up, too, after all. Yeah.
How, in your concept, would you address it? Like, would you, like how... You are not a therapist there. You're just a guest.
Yeah.
So I'm just saying in our everyday life where we're not, like, asked to do something, but we're feeling it.
That depends. That's great. Vasiliki, that's a great question. That depends upon your personal style. Today, I feel that any place I feel uncomfortable, it's my job to say something about it. And how I do it, I try to act nice to begin with. I do. I try to make people feel at home. I don't, because who am I? I'm just one little measure inside a field that may be uncomfortable. But speaking about it in some way, I want to encourage people to do that in a way that has feeling for the people there and that can be useful. That's this whole family therapy. Thing. Yes.
So I don't know if it's appropriate. I have a thought on what you said. Coming from alternative...
It was my relationship problem, sorry. With that, these two things. Isn't that right?
Too close to the microphone.
I was too close
coming
to the speaker.
Coming from an alternative
medicine standpoint.
I was too close to the speaker, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like along
I'm sorry, you said you're coming from an alternative something.
Yeah. I just had a thought medical on that. And something that I have heard in my practice a lot from my teachers is if someone doesn't ask you to heal them, don't, because they might not be ready for it. They might not understand it. They might need something different, and we can't project upon them the type of healing we think is appropriate.
I think it's a great general idea. That's terrific. Super. I love it.
A lot of our work is about that, about feedback and watching. If you say something or you want to do a certain thing, what does the person do? And following their feedback, they know what their process is about and where they want to go.
So it's absolutely. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Arnie, I just want to say something that normally I listen and I hear every word that you say when I go to your workshops, and you were speaking and I wrote something down and I found myself like gone. And I had a question, which was, you said that our early childhood dreams or patterns seem to go along and illuminate what happens to us right up to death.
Yeah.
And I was just wondering, like, how do we use the information about our childhood dreams in our work with clients in that sense.
Uh-huh. If you're working with somebody and you really don't understand what's going on, there's many, many, many things you can do and need to do. Mm-hmm. Did I answer the rest of that?
Yeah.
Many things to do when you're working. But one of them, the childhood dream might be a pattern that shows you a larger story, like her Mediterranean scene here, that shows that the person is working on these parts. Okay, now they're working on the problem with this part. Now this is coming again. Just the attitude towards the person that says, it's okay. You've been working on this before. It's coming back. This is part of maybe your myth, your personal myth, to work on these particular forces in your life. That's a way of using it. Well, give it the large overview, depending upon the situation. Yeah, Susan?
When you asked the audience about allergy experience, and many people put their hands up.
Yes, I thought that, yeah.
I also thought about if you have any thoughts about when illnesses sort of appear, like diabetes is being talked about as something that's going to become extremely common in certain cultures and countries.
Yes.
Do you have thoughts about when a sort of ailment or a symptom experience sort of becomes, I don't know what the words
cultural.
Are, but...
Popular.
Yeah, cultural.
Popular.
Yeah.
Popular.
Fashionable. No, that's not right. Epidemic, yes. Yes. Mm. I don't know enough about that to really be trusted, but what I do know for sure is that here in the Northern Hemisphere, flu season is, what is it, November, December, through what, March, April, something like that?
More or less.
And it is the darkness and more darkness and quiet times, and people who have a lot against their own inwardness, sometimes, I don't know what to say, I don't want to make it too linear, I just want to say, what looks like a cold or a flu may be an excuse for going deeper inside. Mm. And sometimes I wish a whole country could sometimes just have a time to meditate. Mm. And if they don't, maybe everybody gets the flu together. Who knows?
Great question. Make me think that maybe it would be interesting. I know some people here have done something like that. If there's a real epidemic of something, like you're saying, maybe everyone needs to meditate, or maybe a group process around that particular illness and the different parts or experiences. But it's more a cultural group situation. It could be really interesting to
find out about. You mean like a television show about the cold? Dribbling down, someone to go through their personal experience on television.
We did that once.
And we're still in the same city afterwards.
That's true.
Anyone else?
Yeah, I have a comment.
He's right here.
Oh, hi. Yeah.
Hi. I'm sort of struck by what you were talking about when you were talking about quantum holism.
Yes.
And I noticed the way you spelled it, which I thought was really quite fascinating. I think our experience, it's certainly my experience with this, is that, yes, my daily awareness is a quantum whole, is full of quantum holes. And what we're really looking for, and what we really, and I'd love your opinion on this, but what the real reality is a quantum wholeness, wholism.
I love it.
Wholeness.
Yeah. I don't know if you had a question. I just agree with what you're saying. Did you have a question about that? I love that.
No, I just wanted your comments about that, if you had anything.
I do feel that. I know that some of my teachers also said, when thinking about quantum theory, there was no explanation in everyday reality for why these things happen, except that there is a kind of wholeness, like you're referring to, in the back of us, and that all the parts want to connect and interconnect in one way or another. Psychologists, spiritual people have been saying that for a long, long time. Mm-hmm. And so I'm with you.
So our job is to fill in all the holes.
Okay. Fill in all the holes or be there as a facilitator. Our world is missing elders who have what you're referring to, this wholeness, who can say, this energy is important. We need you to take a stand here, and we need this side also to take a stand. And bringing those sides together, the world just has too few such people. So,
thank you.
Yes, work on your body and work in the world. Yeah, maybe that's a good moment to stop for the moment. One more, sorry, excuse me. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. When you all have worked with the very subtle symptoms and signs, does it make a difference if the patient is heavily medicated allopathically?
You mean in somebody in a reduced state of consciousness?
Right.
When you work with someone in a reduced state, does the medicine influence the situation?
Yeah.
I don't know what Arnie would say, but in a lot of the situations when we work with people in coma or very reduced states, the signals are sometimes even more minute than they might be if the person wasn't medicated. We're usually able to work with them anyway, but it seems they're even more subtle than they were before.
But still there.
Still there.
But still there.
So even then, when people are strongly medicated, it's frequently possible to find the person in back of that medication. And and awesome things come out. I'll just refer you to my book and Amy's book on that subject. Yeah. Thanks.
Is that the coma book?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay.
What do you think, Pierre and Jai? I think... Give people a little break. Thank you very much.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you for coming.
Thank you.